There is a nifty little app for your smartphone. It's called Cloak. The app's tagline is incognito mode for real life. And it offers its users the ability to avoid anyone they'd rather not run into. Cloak links to your accounts to uncover the locations of these undesirables on a map, and thereby empowering you to give them as wide a berth as possible. If none of those creeps are around, Cloak flashes the message, all clear. There's nobody nearby. Author Mark O'Connell concludes that Cloak works, but that might not be a good thing. He writes, all clear, there's nobody nearby, reads like such a strange, sad message. Such a lonely thing to have achieved through technological control of our social environments. Looking at that screen makes me want to place my phone face down on my desk, go out into the street, and walk around until I bump into someone I know. We're created in God's image and we were designed for community. And what greater community is there on the face of the planet than the church that God has established, His ecclesia, His called out ones, we who are vitally connected to each other because we are vitally connected to Jesus Christ. And we know when we think of the Corinthian church, what's the first thing you think of when you think of the Corinthian church? What is it?
Corruption.
A church riddled with problems. A church riddled with real people. And yet, it is the church. So what we have here then is a church where there is trouble. There is trouble in the Corinthian church. There's no doubt about that. And so we begin with an overview with, as we look at this paragraph here, verse 13 is astounding, all the emotion that is wrapped up in that verse, and it's all good stuff. Paul is overcome with emotion about the people in this church. Good emotions. This church riddled with problems and corruption. And yet it is the church. And though there is trouble in the church, Paul had to send what he calls a severe letter. We find that earlier in this chapter. He says, look at verse 8, chapter 7, verse 8. Even if I made you sorry with my letter, you were sorrowful because of the letter that I sent you. It was a severe letter. It was an apostolic letter. It was a letter of correction. It was a letter of pointed truth and a requirement for action. And the one who was the messenger of this letter was Titus. Paul sent Titus to the church, and then Titus was going to go back to Paul. Now, Paul was already busy in ministry in Ephesus, and then he went on to Macedonia. Keep your finger there in chapter 7, because this becomes a nail biter for Paul. Look back at chapter 2 of 2 Corinthians. Chapter 2. Look at verse 13. He was in Troas. Verse 13, I had no rest in my spirit because I did not find Titus my brother, but taking my leave of them, I departed from Macedonia. And it's right there. There is a break between verse 13 and 14 of chapter 2. And that break, in that break, this is what happens right here. This paragraph, verses 13 to 16 of chapter 7, is the break that happens between verses 13 and 14 of chapter 2. Because if you remember, in chapter 14, Paul goes into this great doxology of how Christ always leads us in triumph. What happened? Paul went to Macedonia. He was looking for Titus. He wanted a report back from Titus. What happened at the Corinthian church? Did they receive my letter? Did they receive Titus? And did they receive my letter? Did they take the necessary action? This paragraph shows us what happens. So in chapter 7 here, look with me at verses 5 and 6. For indeed, when we came to Macedonia, our bodies had no rest. That just sounds exactly like chapter 2, verse 13, doesn't it? But we were troubled on every side. Outside were conflicts. Inside were fears. Verse 6, nevertheless, God who comforts the downcast comforted us by the coming of Titus. What happened? Chapter 7, verse 13. Therefore, we have been comforted in your comfort, and we rejoice exceedingly more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all. What happened? The Corinthian church received Titus, as the text says, with fear and trembling. What does that mean? They humbled themselves. That's what it means. They humbled themselves under the biblical authority of the apostles' truth. They humbled themselves. And they received Titus as a messenger from the apostle. And they took the necessary corrective action. The church submits, the church corrects. And then because of that, Paul, Titus, and the church are refreshed. And the church rejoices. As the text says here, verse 15, as his affections are greater for you, as he remembers your obedience of you all, how with fear and trembling you received him. Good things happened at the Corinthian church. Here's what happened. Something messy had turned into something really good. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like a great meal, doesn't it? Because before you have a great meal, you have to make a huge mess. That's what we always have to clean up after the meal, right? But in the kitchen, there's a lot of hard work going on. And a mess is being made. But something messy in the Corinthian church had turned into something really good. Because as the text tells us here, Titus, Paul says of Titus, his spirit has been refreshed by you all. What an amazing statement, isn't it? His spirit has been refreshed. Where ought that to happen on this earth but in the church of Jesus Christ? His spirit has been refreshed by you all. I began this morning with a question: what is the church? Many people ask that question, what is the church? Let me use this metaphor this morning. When the church is the church, it is a banquet. When the church is the church, it is a banquet. What do I mean by is? It's not a political statement. When the church is the church, when the church is doing what Christ commands with the mind of Christ. And sometimes that is hard. And Paul mentions it here. He spoke truth. When he was with the Corinthians, he spoke truth. When he had to write them a letter, he spoke truth. But all the time, it was loving truth. But when the church does what Christ commands, and the church does it with the mind of Christ, and Christ came full of grace and truth. It's not just truth. Truth without love is nothing but a blunt instrument. And love without truth is nothing but hypocrisy. So Christ came with grace and truth. And when the church is full of grace and truth, and it does what Christ commands with the mind of Christ, others more important than yourself, then the church becomes a banquet. And we find that. Look at all the emotion that we have revealed to us in verse 13. Let's read the verse again. Look at all the emotional words in there. Therefore, we have been comforted in your comforted, and we rejoiced exceedingly more for Titus, because in his spirit he had been refreshed by you all. That's an amazing verse, isn't it? He had been refreshed by you all. So he was comforted. That's the word parakaleo, to come alongside. That's what happens in a church. When the church is the church, people are coming alongside each other. There is joy. That's the word kara. He rejoiced exceedingly. That is a sense of delight. There is a delight in the people of God. And then he says at the end of verse 13, his spirit had been refreshed by you all. That refreshed simply means rest. Rest. His spirit had been refreshed as a result from resting from work. The work behind the scenes that had to be done, the hard stuff that had to be done, the hard stuff that is a part of the church being the church of Jesus Christ, necessarily speaking truth, but speaking truth in love. And though people's lives are messy sometimes, we don't walk away from the mess, we engage the mess. And when we are willing to, in the mind of Christ, engage the mess, then what results from that is the confidence that he mentions in verse 16. Therefore I rejoice, having confidence in you in everything. This word confidence is an amazing word, thareo. It means firmness of purpose in the face of danger or testing. Firmness of purpose in the face of danger or testing. The church would progress. It would not fall apart because of the messiness that had been there. People's lives are messy. Our lives are messy. There is stuff that needs to be dealt with. And when we are willing to deal with the mess, then the result of that is the banquet of comfort, of joy, of rest, of confidence. That confidence is a firmness of purpose in the face of danger and testing. You see, when we think of the Corinthian church, we think of it as an example of problems. An example of a church that had immorality, a church that had divisions, a church that had corruption, problems in the church. But from this paragraph, listen, church, from this paragraph, now we can recognize the Corinthian church not only as an example of a problem church, but as an example of a church that properly dealt with the problems. And as a result of that, through the messiness, coming out of the messiness and having done what the church is called to do, truth in love, out of that came delight in unity and common purpose. And the Apostle Paul was experiencing a banquet because of the Corinthian church. What contributed to that? What contributed to that? What made the Corinthian church a real community? I think it speaks to it in this text here, particularly in verses 14 and 15. Four elements that I want to refer to here. And so beginning in verse 14, "For if in anything I have boasted to him about you, I am not ashamed. I boasted to him about you." Titus, Paul boasted to Titus. Think about that. This church with problems. If you were Paul and you were speaking to Titus about the Corinthians, what would you say? Do you know, when I thought about that, that really stepped on my toes? I don't think I'd have been boasting about the Corinthian church. But what grounds did Paul have to boast of the Corinthian church? They were the church. They are God's people. They are God's redeemed. What does that mean? God's at work in lives. So Paul spoke well. He didn't put him down. He said, "Oh, Titus, man, I'm sorry. I got to send you over to Corinth. Man, listen, these people are nuts. I'm going to be praying for you, man, because it's going to be a battle over there." It's not what he said. He said, "Titus, I'm sending you over there. God's doing a work in Corinth. God's at work. It's a hard work. And you're a soldier on the front lines. But I'm sending you over there because I know God is at work in these people's lives. They are the church. So lead them, treat them gently, speak truth lovingly to them. Because they're God's people." And he boasted about the Corinthians. Isn't that amazing? Paul was boasting about them. What happens in a church when a church is the church? Recognizing that all of us have a particular messiness in our lives. We as the church are committed to speaking well of each other. To speak well of each other. It is easy, isn't it, when we leave this place and the other people that we encounter or other people in the church that we most identify with or whatever, and we talk about others in the church. What do we say? How do we talk about each other? Do we boast about each other? Do we speak well of each other? Do we recognize the work that God is doing in each other's lives? And better yet, am I willing to be a part of what God is doing in that other person's life? This was Paul's commitment. And this is why he boasted to Titus. So a church that is a real community, a church that becomes a banquet through the messiness, can recognize that the church is a banquet, is a church that speaks well of each other. This is one way that we can truly set ourselves apart from an unregenerate context around us. Because it's very natural to speak ill of those with whom you disagree or who do things in a way that you don't agree with. Joseph Telushkin, author of Words That Hurt, Words That Heal, has lectured throughout the country on the powerful, often negative impact of words. Often, he asks his audience if they can go 24 hours without saying any unkind words about or to another person. Any unkind words about another person. Can you go 24 hours? Invariably, a small number of listeners raise their hands saying yes. Others laugh and quite a few call out no. It means they're committed to saying negative things. Right? Telushkin responds, "Those who can't answer yes must recognize that you have a serious problem. If you can't go 24 hours without drinking liquor, you're addicted to alcohol. If you can't go 24 hours without smoking, you're addicted to nicotine. So if you can't go 24 hours without saying unkind words about others, then you've lost control over your tongue." And we know that the Bible has a lot to say about what we do with our tongue. Don't we? Paul says this, Ephesians 4:29, "Let no corrupt communication proceed from your mouth, but what is good and necessary for edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." That verse is the church doing what the church does. When the church is the church becomes a banquet. But if I let my tongue loose and I remove myself from this context, and then I'm talking to other people and I say, man, those people, I just, yeah. Or that person or whatever. You know, and I start saying negative things. And the reason I say negative things is because I'm, what am I doing before I say negative things? I'm thinking negative things. Now that doesn't mean I deny truth. You know what? There might be something that I disagree with in somebody else's life. They might be doing something they might have said or something like, there might be a messiness going on in their lives. But does that give me the right to wag my tongue and saying something negative about them? No. When the church is the church, the people speak well of each other. Just like Paul boasted of the Corinthian church to Titus, even though the church was riddled with problems. And it was a nail biter for Paul. He did not know if the church was going to receive Titus. And yet he bragged about the church to Titus. It's amazing, isn't it? That is spiritual activity. That is going beyond human capacity, and that is being led by the Spirit. That is the church being the church. And when the church is the church, it is a banquet. And so we, as we speak well of each other, we only say to and about each other things that are necessary for edification, to build each other up, to impart grace to the hearers. It's like a line from a movie that my kids like, if you have nothing nice to say, please restrict your comments to the weather. Right? What was Paul's boasting? What can your boasting be? Recognizing that there is an element of messiness to all of our lives. I have confidence that God is at work in you. And how can I get in on it? How can I be one who is at work in somebody else's life? How can I be an instrument of God to work in this person's life, to get involved in the messiness there? Instead of speaking negatively about them, I will speak well of them in terms of the work that God is doing. But that takes us to the second point, the elements of real community where the church becomes a banquet. The second point is this. Not only do we speak well of each other, but we speak truth. We speak truth. We speak truth. Listen, truth is a necessary part of love. As I said before, love without truth is hypocrisy. If you pretend to love your brother and sister, but you're not willing to speak truth, you're a hypocrite. That's strong language. I understand that, but it's true. If you act like you love your brother and sister, but you're not willing to speak truth to them, you're a hypocrite. And sometimes we're so bent on trying to keep a relationship or keep a friendship that we're not willing to speak truth. And if I have a brother or a sister who is in error and I'm not willing to speak truth, but yet I will show them and tell them that I love them, I'm a hypocrite. Loved ones, I stand before you confessing this morning that I've been guilty of that. There have been times when I have been so afraid to say something to somebody because I was afraid that they would reject me or walk away or leave the church. And because of my hesitancy, because of my silence, because of not doing anything, guess what? They left the church anyway. Happens all the time. It happens in every church. But the point of this is that we speak truth. Paul had to speak truth to the Corinthian church. He wasn't sure how they were going to receive it. But you see, that's not the issue. The issue is he had to be obedient to the call to speak truth. If he truly loved the Corinthians, he would speak truth to them. And because he obeyed Christ and spoke the truth, church then became a banquet. Because Paul wasn't just speaking opinion. Or he wasn't just commenting on his perception of things. He was speaking truth. And that's what we need to be very careful about. When we come together and we all recognize that there's a particular messiness in each of our lives, We're not just speaking opinion to each other. But that's where so many people break down at this level. Because they will say, what right do you have to tell me what to do? The assumption behind a pushback like that is, well, it's just your opinion against mine. That's not what we're called to do. The Bible doesn't call us to speak opinions to each other. We are called to speak truth. Verse 14, but as we spoke all things to you in truth. There is a particular reference point to truth. There is a standard to truth. It is God's revelation. It's God's truth. And so we are called to speak that. So we speak well of each other. We are called to speak truth. And in a real community where church becomes a banquet, not only do we speak well of each other, not only are we willing to obediently and lovingly speak truth, but there is also a very real sense of affection. A real sense of affection. Where one receives the sense from the other, I really care for you. I think it would be fair to say that those at the Corinthian church never once felt that the Apostle Paul stood over them in judgment. He genuinely cared for them. And because they knew that the Apostle genuinely cared for them, they received Titus humbly. And they repented and they corrected. I really care for you. Versus a pretense that there might be in the church. If I say I love someone or I really care for someone in the church, I need to be careful because I might just be saying you're working for the one I love the most, me. I love you because of what you do for me. That wasn't what the Apostle Paul was saying. That's not love. That's not the biblical agape. It's very easy for me to stand up here and say, I love you for what you do to the church. I love you for what you contribute to the church. That's not genuine love. That's not agape love. But among God's people, there is a genuine desire to be together. Because of the common bond that we have and the common purpose that we have in Christ. All of that comes together. And when that genuine sense of affection is there, verse 15, and his affections are greater for you as he remembers the obedience of you all. Obedience to what? They submitted themselves to Paul's truth, inspired by the Holy Spirit. Paul the Apostle speaking with apostolic authority. So that fourth element is just simply this, submission to biblical authority. We have an authority for our lives. It's not a particular position in the church. It's not a personality in the church. It's not opinions. Quite frankly, it's not even a man-made document. It is the Word of God. And when we submit ourselves to this biblical authority, and it's done so in the context of a genuine sense of affection for each other, and we speak truth, and we speak well of each other, then church becomes a banquet. And we will find that within us will develop this genuine desire to be in each other's company. I believe the true church senses that. I desire to be with God's people because church is a banquet. Yeah, there's messy lives there. But you know what? There's also truth. There's also affection. There's also mutual submission to the truth. And that makes church a banquet. Submission to biblical authority. It's apostolic authority. The authority of the Scriptures. If you've read Screwtape Letters, you know that Screwtape is the represents the adversary, the chief of demons, and he's writing to his associates, which would be the demons, and he writes to this one particular named Wormwood. So you have to remember that everything he writes is exactly opposite as it ought to be. And when he speaks of the adversary, he's speaking of Christ, the head of the church. Okay. Here's one letter that he writes. My dear Wormwood, you mentioned casually in your last letter that the patient, that's a human being, okay, the patient has continued to attend one church and only one since he was converted, and that he is not wholly pleased with it. May I ask what you are about? Translation, what is the point of view, right? Why have I no report on the causes of his fidelity to the parish church? Do you realize that unless it is due to indifference, it is a very bad thing? Surely you know that if a man can't be cured of church going, the next best thing is to send him all over the neighborhood looking for the church that suits him until he becomes a taster or a connoisseur of churches. The search for a suitable church makes the man a critic, where the enemy wants him to be a pupil. That mutual submission to the authority of the Word of God makes church a banquet. This is versus pretense that there can be in the church. I have sinned the sin of criticism in my heart, but I'll smile and say, fine, anyway. Or comparisons. Church is not going to be a banquet if we're coming together to compare ourselves to each other. That robs us of the banquet of the church. When we come together to compare ourselves, we're just simply focused on people when we should be focused on the Lord. Where there is pretense and there are comparisons in the church, then there is judgment, unnecessary human judgment in the church, where we point fingers at each other saying, you're not what you ought to be. You know, there's something very strikingly similar to this, about this, to marriage. I do a fair amount of premarital counseling. And so Paul's words to the church are a lot like premarital counseling. When I counsel a young couple to get married, as they're planning to get married, I tell them, I don't want you to just do the things so that your marriage survives. I want your marriage to thrive. I want your marriage to be a banquet. But it will require something of you for that to be the case. And what I tell them is, you have to understand that you are two different people, but you are also two imperfect people. When you come to grips with those things, that you're both different and you're both imperfect, and yet, you promise and affirm and reaffirm your commitment to each other. Then a messy thing can become something absolutely beautiful. And so it is with the church. The church, when it is the church, is a banquet. There's none of us perfect here. None of us. We all have an element of messiness in our lives, and yet we come together as the church, as God's redeemed people, and God is doing a work in us. So let us be a people who can look at the church and find a banquet there, a banquet of comfort and joy and rest and confidence. Why? Because there is a genuine sense of affection. Because we submit to the truth. Because we speak well of each other. In that sense, church can genuinely be a banquet. And so I admonish you this morning, I exhort you this morning, look as the Lord is looking to your own heart and mind. Am I contributing to the banquet in the church, or am I just making the mess? Church can be a banquet. And I look forward to being together with God's people every time we have that opportunity.